listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You just found the very best in original talk radio broadcasting on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want. What we want. You're listening to On the Couch, On the Couch with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and you are welcome to my couch. Hey, everybody. As usual, a wonderful guest today. You're not going to want to miss this show. And of course, as always, you can download and replay tomorrow. But you do want to tune in right now because this is where it's at. Wherever you're at, in your car, on your iPhone, you can go into the iTunes podcasts. All of my shows are here, also on LA Talk Radio. You know, many people who believe in the 2012 so-called shift in consciousness, right, say that humanity is on sort of a precipice to either go the right way and open up their hearts and minds to experience humility and reject fear, or go the other way. Remember, see, I didn't say wrong. I don't like to say wrong. It's not in my vocabulary usually, but it's going the wrong way. It's going the down way. And continue sort of the fear-based polarization that they've created in themselves and our world as well. Because we're living in aware and conscious, and we've been talking about this shift, many believe that it's something new and different. But the truth is that shifts have been going on throughout the course of humanity, throughout the history of human beings. However, let me just say that I agree with our guest today, that extremism seems to be on the rise. And today we're talking about what's happening to our world. What the heck's going on? And the polarized mind of many. My special guest is Dr. Kirk Schneider. He's a licensed psychologist and a leading spokesperson for contemporary humanistic psychology. Dr. Schneider is also past editor of the Existential Humanistic Institute. And this is just to name a few. I'm just getting to the short bio. And he's also published over 100 articles and authored and edited 10 books. But today we're going to be talking about his latest book entitled The Polarized Mind, Why It's Killing Us and What We Can Do About It. What can we do about this? Well, we're going to find out. I also encourage you to call in if you'd like, if you have a question for Dr. Schneider. The number here on LA Talk Radio is 323-203-0815. 323-203-0815. If you're shy, you don't want to get your voice on the air, feel free to email me at docmichelle with two L's at AOL.com. Ask a question and we'll try to accommodate you here. Well, hello there, Dr. Schneider. So nice to have you on
the
show.
Hello, Michelle. Thank you very much for inviting me on the show.
Well, I'll tell you, your book was what a great read. You know what really like about The Polarized Mind? Why it's killing us and what we can do about it. There's so much research backing up your theories about what's going on in the world these days.
Yes, I'm very excited about that.
Yeah.
And there seems to be a special convergence of both qualitative and quantitative research now backing up the thesis of the book.
Yeah. In the back of the book, it's very intriguing. It makes you just want to go to the front and start reading. It says, what do a school shooter, a corporate swindler, and a bullheaded ideologue have in common? Well, they all converge on what author Kirk Schneider terms the polarized mind. Let's find out more about that. What exactly is a polarized mind, Dr. Schneider?
Well, the polarized mind is the fixation on one point of view to the utter exclusion of competing points of view.
Hmm.
And it's a kind of extremism that has been demonstrated over and over again through history. And in the book, I basically trace how power structures, or power centers, I should say, you know, the big cultures of history,
yeah,
in terms of wealth and military power, mm-hmm, how power centers and their leaders have developed a polarized mind through history right up into our own times.
Mm-hmm. Where do you see this type of thinking happening right now in our world?
I think it's very wide-ranging today. I mean, we not only see it in terms of some of these rampage killings, the recent bombings, for example, in Boston, and the mass shootings that we you know, some horrible places, malls and schools.
Yes.
But I think we see it in extremes in politics, in certainly the excessive striving for wealth and material goods,
mm-hmm,
as demonstrated in the recent blow up of Wall Street,
mm-hmm,
and we see it, I believe, in terms of our extremist nationalism and,
mm-hmm,
racism that remains, and ethnocentrism,
mm-hmm,
and our fear of other cultures, other religions,
mm-hmm,
and also extremist religion as,
mm-hmm,
well.
Mm-hmm.
Fundamentalism, for example.
Oh, yes.
But, absolutely, you know, I think it's a subtler problem than that today also,
mm-hmm,
because I do think we see it in our preoccupation with technology,
mm-hmm,
and more people being tethered to their cell phones, their text messages, their videos, and not really opening up to the, you know, to the natural world very much.
Right.
Or to natural relationships.
No, exactly.
So many relationships are virtual,
yes, you know,
through the machinery.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is a growing problem of polarization as well.
Oh.
And they all, for me, converge on some kind of denial of our human vulnerability.
Boy, is that true. I mean, they do, absolutely. And you are a leading spokesperson for contemporary humanistic psychology. Maybe you can elaborate a little bit more about what is humanistic psychology?
Humanistic psychology poses the basic question of, what does it mean to be fully experientially human?
Mm.
It's a very broad perspective, and it's a holistic perspective in psychology.
Mm-hmm.
Not all specialties within psychology are particularly holistic.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them focus just on outward behavior or on intellectual functioning, you know, cognitive psychology,
mm-hmm,
or physiological functioning, brain functioning, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But humanistic psychology attempts to include all of those dimensions, as well as sort of deeper questions about who we are,
yes,
what we deeply desire as,
right,
human beings that,
yeah,
isn't so readily, seen.
Yeah, exactly. No, exactly. And, I'm really in agreement with you, because I practice a lot of humanistic psychology. I mean, I focus, mm-hmm, on everybody's potential, and I try to stress the importance of growth and, you know, the self-actualization, of course, which Maslow talked about. But,
yeah,
you know, I also talk about how people are innately good, and that mental and social problems result from, you know, deviations from this natural tendency. And that's what you're talking about, I think, with the tendency of having the polarized mind, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say that I'm beginning with the premise that people are all good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure, you know, exactly what we mean by that, but I do begin with the premise that we're all worthy.
Uh-huh.
And I think that we're all worthy because we're all chosen to,
yes,
exist.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying who or what chooses us, but,
mm-hmm,
we have been provided the gift of life,
mm-hmm,
And yes. Mysteriously, that means we are a part of all that exists.
Yes.
We're participating in this, you know, magnificent and breathtaking creation.
Yes.
And so just by dint of that alone, everyone is worthy and precious.
Yes.
And if we can realize that from the beginning, helps enormously in building a genuine sense of self-esteem, not mm-hmm. just pseudo-esteem.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that leads to much more ethical behavior, because you don't want to be hurting or killing mm-hmm. people, including yourself, mm-hmm. who you appreciate at such a deep level.
That's so true. No, that's exactly right. In your book, The Polarized Mind, you touch on how, as I mentioned earlier in the show, estranged killers and corporate swindlers and notorious leaders and their followers have
yes.
become repeatedly polarized throughout history.
Yes.
And can you sort of elaborate mm-hmm. on the history of just touching on some of these events and people?
Yeah, just a thumbnail. And I give snippets of these historical epics mm-hmm. because obviously I'm not a historian, mm-hmm. but I really try to make the stories about each of these cultures engaging for people. It's sort of a walkthrough through history that
yeah.
you may not have had or remember, mm-hmm. you know, in going through school. But I really begin with the Babylonian myths, the myth that came out of Sumer
mm-hmm.
From thousands of years ago, maybe 3,000 plus years ago. And this myth, the first one that I'm aware of, is called it's kind of a funny name to us now, but Enuma, it's mm-hmm. E-N-U-M-A,
mm-hmm.
Not like enema.
Enuma. Thank you for clarifying that, Dr. Schneider.
I got to clarify that. Enuma Elish.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the early creation myths that's been recorded
mm-hmm.
in writing, and it's about a husband and wife, basically.
Yes.
The wife's named Tiamat, creation a creatrix, I should say, a mother goddess.
Right.
And the husband is Apsu. And they supposedly create the world and the creatures in it.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they have kids.
Right.
And here is our first hint of recorded polarization.
Yeah.
Where Apsu and Tiamat's kids start to rebel.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
As kids do throughout history, right?
That's right.
So basically, what happens is the kids upset the very serene and predictable order
mm-hmm.
that these parents have evolved, and that is very upsetting to them, and that brings about this classic problem of feeling like one is less than.
Right.
One is... There's a kind of a helplessness,
yes,
an existential helplessness, which, I mean, the research shows is related to death anxiety. We don't maybe
yes.
have to go into that detail,
mm-hmm.
but the fear of
yes.
of one's smallness, of one's unimportance before the universe,
right,
insignificance,
sure,
then fuels a reaction, a counter reaction, to do everything one can to avoid that sense of vulnerability and
yes.
insignificance.
Yeah.
And what you have is Apsu, the husband, basically putting a contract out on the kid, one of the kids.
Oh, my God.
Causing so much trouble.
Right.
Like a Tony Soprano, right?
Right, exactly.
But similar to sort of mafia realm, the kids get onto it, and they send out somebody to kill the dad. So before he's able to...
Yeah.
Fulfill that contract, he is killed.
Wow.
And then, of course, that enrages the mom, Tiamat.
Yes.
And so she then goes after the kids with a fury. And this
yes.
goes on for several generations until the kids finally come up with this almost indestructible monster they call Marduk, who basically just cleans up.
Right.
And wow. and brings about a kind of fascism.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of prototype for fascism.
Yes, yeah.
And so what you have is the beginnings of showing how polarization begets polarization, and you have a vicious cycle of extremism.
Yeah.
Basically opposing any hint of a sense of insignificance.
Wow.
And that,
yes.
you know, can cause a catastrophe in a society. So this is a cautionary tale.
Right, right.
And then we have through history examples of leaders such as Caesar, whose father died when he was very young,
right,
who was very upstart and felt oppressed by the current regime, and he began to develop a very grandiose complex, basically feeling he should be better than Alexander the Great, and anything
right,
less than that was
right,
ultimate defeat. And he went basically, went pretty wild in terms of becoming the first hugely expansive Roman emperor, and conquered. You know, I see
yeah,
and I conquer.
Exactly.
Basically,
right,
his modus operandi.
Yeah, yeah.
So, what you have is a culture that's on a sort of parallel path with the leader. There was apparently quite a bit of disarray in Rome and
right,
lack of leadership, and so he really came in and filled a vacuum.
Yeah.
People were looking for a strong arm. You have this perfect storm of convergence toward
yes,
an extremely powerful, you could say, totalitarian
yes,
type
yes,
state.
Yeah.
And that's the prototype. And
right,
we see this kind of thing repeated. I mean, in more contemporary examples,
mm-hmm, yes,
Chairman Mao in China also was brutalized in childhood.
Yes.
And
yes,
his culture was obviously brutalized after the Japanese invasion
right,
in World War II.
Right, right, absolutely.
Hitler, of course, in Germany
right,
would be the ultimate
right,
example of this kind of how polarization
mm-hmm,
forms.
Mm-hmm.
Where Germany itself was just decimated after World War I, and they were given horrible terms at the Treaty of Versailles.
Right, right.
And their inflation went out of control, and skyrocketing depression.
Sure,
both
absolutely,
financially and mentally.
Yes, absolutely.
And culture had a great deal of pride,
mm-hmm,
and so they crashed.
Yeah, they did.
They were looking for somebody like a Hitler who was also brutalized in childhood.
Right.
And found a way to, oppose that in the
yeah,
most extreme and depraved ways.
Right.
And
right,
you also see it in Stalin.
Right. Yes,
you
do. You
see Napoleon. I mean,
you do.
On.
Isn't that fascinating? And, an ongoing theme here is brutalized in childhood or, dealing with a lot of unresolved issues that they had to grow up and polarize people to a certain extent.
That's a definite theme. And I think
yes,
that's one of the reasons I wrote this book. I was really mm-hmm, trying to get down to some of the deeper existential bases
right,
for
right,
extremism and polarization.
Yeah.
We have a lot of writing in the world now about
sure,
these topics,
yeah,
but they come from a more, say, political or economic standpoint or sometimes genetics.
Yeah.
And I don't think they're really getting to these deeper
mm-hmm,
issues. We really need to deal with the deeper seeds of these
yes,
problems. And like you say, they often begin right in childhood.
Yeah.
Alice Miller writes beautifully about this, by
boy,
the way.
Boy, she does. And oh, I love her stuff.
You know her work. Yeah.
I do.
Untouched Tea.
Yes. She's
one,
amazing. And I do agree, Dr. Schneider, with your philosophy about our kids, talking about our kids. Not only a lot of abuse, being raised by narcissistic parents, having unresolved issues as children. But again, and I don't mean to be down on techies, but the preoccupation
right,
with technology, really, it's more, there's less communication and less understanding, less socialization, which is such a big part of where we really find out who we are in our lives.
Yeah. I don't want to paint it completely bleak
right,
the technology
yeah,
issue, because I don't think we really know. It's a new development.
Right.
And, our kids are telling us.
They're brilliant.
As older people to slow down. But yeah, they are.
Right.
Many of them are. And don't be so critical so quickly. And, every generation tends to criticize the younger ones and be worried.
Yeah.
So we need to keep that in mind. And it's done a lot of good.
Right.
You think about the Arab Spring and information getting out
mm-hmm,
to the world.
Yes.
Very ethical kinds of protests that are formed through
yes,
quick communications with people who are, who are
right,
involved in the situation.
Exactly.
So that's all true. But I also can't help but feel that there is a kind of It seems to be a corrosion of one's dignity to some degree when there's an over-reliance on machinery to operate in the world. It's kind of like living vicariously through the machine instead of through one's own thoughts, feelings, body sensations, intuitions, and so on. So I think that's what worries me more, is that insidious kind of corrosion of the, you know, a kind of demoralization, which is very depressing for I think a number of kids.
Yeah, it really is, and I truly agree with you. By the way, if you just tuned in here, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle, and my special guest today is Dr. Kirk Schneider. He's a licensed psychologist, author, spokesperson for contemporary humanistic psychology, many other accolades, huge biography, but he's the author of his latest book called The Polarized Mind, Why It's Killing Us and What Can We Do About It. We're talking about what the polarized mind is all about. And the Sumerians, you said, right? The first probably written indication that polarization was sort of taking place in the tales that were described there.
Right. Yeah. That's my understanding. Is that they really have developed the first forms of writing as we understand it.
Right.
Cuneiform, I guess.
Right. How can we combat this polarization that's happening right now?
Well, that's the really pivotal question, and it's obviously not an easy problem. It's very deep-seated, and so the solutions, as I see them, are not not simplistic either.
Yeah,
there are, of course, kind of immediate things that we can do, and we probably are doing, you know, which have to do with our safety and security and
right,
so on.
Right.
Those are necessary to an extent, although I think we could also become polarized in terms of, you know, over-surveillance and uptightness.
Right.
But in the longer term, what I basically call for is what I call a Manhattan Project for depth psychology.
What's that about?
Well, I think we need the equivalent of a Manhattan Project, you know, where they built the atomic bomb to defeat Hitler, basically, during World War II. I think things are that dire because it's not that polarization's new, it's just its capacity for destruction is much greater than it has been in the past because of our technology. So, you know, in the wrong hands, you know, we're all in trouble, and that's true in terms of the environment too.
Boy, is that true?
We see our environments, and you know, we're in real trouble in a number of areas, environmentally, and in terms of terrorism and so on. So, in the longer term, and I think these are things we could implement very soon, and would be helpful. I'm going to go out on a limb, and I suggest, as I do in the book, that we we basically divert a sum, even a quarter, of the amount of money that we invest in, let's say, weaponry and psychiatric drug development.
Yes,
to bolstering our mental health system.
Yes.
Especially for the kinds of kids that are growing up so alienated and so demoralized.
Right.
So that, you know, these kids, and some of them are would-be, you know, rampagers, are getting more than 6 weeks of anger management.
Yeah, exactly.
Seeing a psychiatrist once a month.
Yeah.
Or for 20 minutes. You know, I'm painting it a little crudely, but these are the kinds of things that we've been seeing. We're doing patch-up jobs.
Yeah, we are.
On our kids and in our mental health system, in my view. It's not nearly enough based on the data that we have now, which indicates that, first of all, the relationship in psychotherapy is vitally important, the most important ingredient.
It is.
In terms of psychotherapy.
Yes, it is.
And much more than technique.
Yes.
And that the building of a relationship with the client is vitally important.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also an indication that longer-term psychotherapy is more effective in many cases than the shorter term.
Yes.
So with all that, I propose that we divert significant amounts of money to supporting accessible, longer-term, intensive relational therapy.
Yes.
At the level of, national mental health care.
Yes.
Have it available. So, because, again, as we were talking, kids especially are not particularly encountering therapeutic relationships in their lives these days, a lot of them.
Exactly.
So that, I think, is key.
I do, too.
I also go a bit out on a limb and suggest that we have depth-oriented facilitators work with politicians.
Oh, that's a good
one. So that they don't just relate to each other in terms of rhetoric or, a lobbyist mentality.
Right, right.
But person to person.
Right.
The kind of thing that Carl Rogers was trying to implement.
Exactly. Humanistic empathy, trust.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yes. Empathy, alliance.
Yes.
Understanding. Provision of hope.
Yes. Yes.
And meeting whole person to whole person so that you understand. First, you got to be able to understand the other person to really substantively be able to respond to them.
It's really true. And the other person, somehow, it is a technique and it's difficult to create that trust and understanding. You have to have that empathy within you as a therapist and I think as a human being in order to have more successful social relationships.
I totally agree with that.
You know, Kirk,
and think about just I'm sorry, a quick example of Begin and Sadat with Jimmy Carter in 76. Yeah. The thing that seemed to really break the ice was when they could relate to themselves as people.
Yes.
And I think it was when Jimmy Carter showed a photograph of his grandkids to the parties and then they started showing photographs of their grandchildren.
Yes.
And then that was when the ice began to break and there was, more human contact.
Why is that true?
The rest is history.
Mm-hmm. You know, Kirk, we have a caller on the line. Let's see if we can bring him up. You're on LA Talk Radio with my guest, Dr. Kirk Schneider. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, hi.
Yes,
who's this?
Yeah, this is Sean.
Hi, Sean. How are you today?
Hi, Sean.
I'm doing great, Interesting discussion. I have a question for the doctor. Do you see any polarization within the Obama administration?
That's a challenging question.
Put you on
one.
The spot here.
What's that?
I put you on the spot here with this guest.
That's okay. First of all, I feel like Obama's presidency is a world historical event, and I'm very heartened by just the idea that such a superpower, the first really superpower in history, has brought an African American to that highest office.
Right.
I give our country a lot of credit for that.
Yes.
Feels like we've come a long, long way in that
we
sense.
We have.
And I think Obama is a very substantive person. He's a thoughtful person.
Mm-hmm.
That said, yes, of course. There are polarizations within the Obama administration, within the Democratic Party, as there are certainly within the Republican Party on the extremes.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see the Obama administration and the Democratic Party get behind much more emphasis in our school system, in our public school system, on the arts and humanities.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is a very powerful way to undermine the polarized mind. Instead, I see some unfortunate trends in the opposite direction toward, just kind of a very practical oriented or technically oriented a material so that people can get jobs in more technical fields.
Right.
This whole emphasis on the STEM discipline, science, technology, engineering, mathematics. Those are vital. I'm not denying that. But just as vital, studying the great philosophers and writers of history.
Yes.
Diverse philosophers and writers.
Right.
And I also would like to see much more funding for, as I say, more substantive mental health. More openness to dialogue,
mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. in the case of you know, diplomacy.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I do have some concerns about our use of technology, certain technologies like the drone.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. especially if it is replacing, you know, the powerful potential of the kind of dialogues that I was talking about.
Yeah. Great answer. Sean?
I wonder what you think.
Yeah.
I definitely agree with you. Definitely agree.
So that, did he help you out there? Clarify?
Yes, he did. It's very interesting. Thank you so much.
All right, Sean. Thanks
thank
for calling
you.
In. Appreciate your call.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. All right. Good caller. That was terrific.
Yep.
So let's get to talking more about trying to work on folks to, you know, you suggested a lot more humanistic therapeutic techniques to help people out, to help the young people out, to help whoever would be willing to get help. You know, you suggest what's called awe-based reformation, and
reformation,
that's awe, yeah. A-W-E, to combat the polarization we're having now. Sorry, I've been up since 4 a.m. I was working for CBS Radio this morning, and I'm a little tired. My words are slow. How do we follow these steps, or what are these steps that you suggest, the awe-based reformation that can help folks?
Well, awe-based reformation is all about helping kids to develop their sense of humility and wonder, mm-hmm. or sense of adventure toward living.
Mm-hmm.
That's it, and just that basic sensibility, which is so quickly lost in our culture and many cultures today,
right.
As they are conditioned, you know, to have to get the grades,
yeah.
or
yeah.
You know, deal with the very technical demands of our world.
Oh yeah.
So I think we need a huge infusion of that, and first of all, the basic communication from the parent,
right.
that, again, you've been chosen, you've been selected somehow,
yes.
to be here.
Yes.
And
yes.
how incredible that is.
Yes, yes.
It you know, certainly comes with pain and fear and all kinds of other feelings,
mm-hmm.
Or a wide range of feelings.
Mm-hmm.
But at the deepest level,
yes.
that's an amazing thing, something to be cherished.
Yes.
You are cherished.
Yes, exactly.
In that deepest sense. And I think that's communicated through, not just through, you know, discussion or intellectual discussion, but through joining your kid in activities.
Yeah, I mean, sure.
You know, whether it's rolling in the mud together,
yes.
celebrating nature, and you know, taking the kids swimming or hiking or
exactly.
looking at stars or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
This is all part of it. To be able to take that kind of time, I think, is vital as a base.
It really is. You know, it's showing our children that you are an integral part. You are such a special human being, and I'm so pleased that we can share this together. And
yeah.
you know, giving children an identity that they are so loved and appreciated just for being
yes.
just for being who they are.
Just for being who they are.
Exactly.
And that's not a justification to be Pollyannish about it. In
right.
other words,
yeah.
to praise everything they do or
right.
talk about how they are immune from any of the other problems that other people have. No,
well,
that's not
right.
where I'm coming from, but
yeah.
but it's this important piece. Along with helping kids to face their lives honestly,
mm-hmm.
too. That's a part of the honesty, but also other parts of the honesty is to be able to feel their feelings.
Yes.
To feel anger, to feel anxiety.
Yes.
I mean, within, you know, supported limits.
Well, right.
But not to just seal them off and give them this pristine path, which I'm sometimes concerned that we're heading toward with, again, all our high-tech wizardry.
Right.
We end up with a kind of a manicured existence for kids.
Right.
Where they're not really encouraged to encounter some
yes.
of life's wilder or less comfortable sides, which are all part of developing an awe-based, fully flowering personality, if you will.
No, exactly. This is the kind of stuff I love to talk about, too. By the way, in case you just tuned in here, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio. My special guest today, Dr. Kirk Schneider, he's the author of his latest book, The Polarized Mind, Why It's Killing Us and What We Can Do About It. He's primarily a spokesperson for humanistic psychology, contemporary humanistic psychology as well. And we're talking about raising resilient adults, you know, to strengthen them, and awe-grounded kids. And, you know, I totally agree with you. I think Alice Miller's work is amazing, which, you know, also talks about how we have to strengthen ourselves, our own self-esteem, for our children. We have to get a clue.
Absolutely.
We can't unless we can't really pass on the gifts of awe-grounded kids unless we have that within us, right?
I think that's right on.
Yeah.
And, of course, that speaks to the largeness of this project of reforming our daily life with healthy doses of more of an awe-based sensibility.
Yes.
It means that in order to do this right, we need to address every major sector of living. From child rearing to the educational system to the work setting to the religious and spiritual settings to even the governance settings. And I have suggestions for that in my book as well as in a previous book, Rediscovery of Awe and Awakening to Awe.
That's a great book, by the way.
Oh, thank you. I didn't know you read that.
It's
but
terrific.
I appreciate that.
Wow. Yes.
So basically, what I'm talking about is bringing that sensibility to, for example, the work setting. I mean, one of the suggestions I have for those employers who are willing and courageous enough to, you know, to take the risk, pioneering enough, could be a pilot project, to take even an hour a week, have employees who are willing or interested in gathering together with, again, facilitators who are trained in depth group process and psychology to support these employees to genuinely confront the meaning and implication of their work for their own lives, for those they serve, and those they touch, and to allow them that opportunity. To infuse their work with that aliveness. What does it really mean for them?
A lot of big corporations could use these kind of great group facilitators who could.
Well, I think so. I mean, some people are threatened by it.
Sure, they are.
Could undermine certain bottom lines.
That's
You know, on the other hand, a good deal of research has shown that you have happy employees or employees who really feel a meaningful connection with their work. And the productivity goes up, and the the company itself benefits.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's interesting. I was reading this study about they do have research on humanistic, you know, but in terms of like Maslow had the hierarchy of needs, but they did a study, and you know probably more about current studies published in 2011, the researchers from the University of Illinois, they tried to put that hierarchy to the test, you know, basic needs, you know, survival, and then down to the more, what I would say, more important needs, happiness and self-actualization. Anyway, what they discovered is that while fulfillment of those needs was very, very well correlated with happiness, people from cultures all over reported that self-actualization and social needs were important, even when many of those basic needs, shelter, you know, nourishment, you know, that kind of thing, were unfulfilled. Some of the most important things to them were, you know, self-actualization, which are, you know, the highest level of Maslow's hierarchy, with
right.
people who are self-aware, concerned with personal growth, less concerned with the opinions, interested in fulfilling their potential and socializing and being real human beings.
Yes.
And
yes.
truly interested in others.
Yes. I have heard of that later research,
yeah.
and I'm aware that his original idea that you had to pass through each of the stages really has been
right.
Undermined to an extent.
Right.
It's not that linear.
Right.
And, of course, we see this with some of the amazing spiritual adepts throughout the world who take vows of poverty or live with very little
right.
Creaturely means.
That's right.
And yet achieve some of the most fulfilling and sort of even ethically
right.
informed consciousness
yes.
that we are aware of. Gandhi is probably a great example.
Oh, an amazing example. What Dr. Schneider is talking about, too, and I was mentioning, is this Maslow was introducing his concept of that hierarchy of needs. You have to, as Dr. Schneider said, you have to go through these stages of physiological needs, meeting security needs, just safety and social needs and belonging and love and esteem needs, things like that. And then they had the self-esteem and then self-actualizing needs, like I said, was the highest level of really reaching out, being open and aware. And you don't have to necessarily go through the hierarchy. You can go, if you're ready to self-actualize and be a spiritual being, you're doing
yeah.
well. Yes.
I mean, and I think we need to be realistic about
of
it.
Course.
I mean, most people, if they don't have bread on the table,
well,
it's pretty tough to, to be very spiritual or feel the luxury of time
yeah.
to develop these kinds of qualities.
Yeah.
On
yeah.
the other hand, it is accessible to all of us at
yes.
every moment, and that's one of the beauties of awe-based consciousness is
yes.
that it's right here.
Mm-hmm.
I heard a quote from Allen Ginsberg was something to the effect that he was encouraging us to find the eternal perception in the ordinary mind.
That's,
I thought it was a beautiful...
That is beautiful, yes.
Yeah, find the eternal perception in
the ordinary
mind.
Boy, is that true. Yeah. I think that's the key, too. How can we... How can we learn to recognize fear-based changes, movements, revolutions out there around us?
Well, I would go right back to our definition again, or my definition for the polarized mind, which is the fixation on one point of view
yep.
to the utter exclusion of competing points of view.
Right.
And when a group or a culture or an individual becomes caught up in that, I think the red flags need to go out.
Mm-hmm.
I think those are the red flags,
yes.
If we can recognize them, of a potentially very destructive force in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, these things are on a spectrum. It's not always
yeah.
so easy to clarify,
that's
you
true.
Know, how polarized one is and
yeah.
what degree, how much they're bent on that a destructive path.
Right.
But I think that that definition and that mentality is
mm-hmm.
is clear enough to
you can nail
make
it.
Us alert.
Dr. Schneider, how do we best cope with terrorists, just extremists,
well,
people who have no awareness and just want to kill Americans or anyone who thinks like infidels, as
yeah.
we would say.
Of course, again, there's no simple answer here, but I do think that this growing wealth of evidence that we have from what's called terror management theory, which I draw from substantively in the book,
right.
is very informative here. What I understand is that a number of our top terrorist experts who are attuned to the field of psychology
mm-hmm.
Are finding more and more that it's not so much economics or you know, say a brain disorder or something like that that's driving these folks, or even necessarily
right.
the religious extremism, mm-hmm. it's that sense of insignificance, mm. that sense that one doesn't count.
Yes.
And that is a recipe for the kinds of catastrophes that we've been seeing. And if you look more deeply at the lives of the kind of people
yes.
that we've seen who have been destructive recently, I think you'll see this tremendous sense of alienation and lack of a sense of value
so because,
about themselves.
Yes, yes.
And so they design their lives around doing
right.
everything they can to avoid that sense of smallness and
yes.
unimportance.
So,
and of course, it becomes is proportional to that. Their grandiosity is proportional to that.
Right.
And so how do we deal with that? Well, some of the things that I just mentioned, I mm-hmm. think, are very powerful counters. You know,
yes.
bringing much more depth psychological thinking, mm-hmm. more group process thinking, more dialogical sort of thinking mm-hmm. to our ways of working with folks who, you know, are emotionally very challenged,
right.
disturbed, etc., and really taking the time that's necessary. This should be a priority.
Right.
You know,
absolutely.
You know, again, it should be worth a quarter of the amount we spend on
yeah.
drug and weaponry development.
Well, I hear you. Yes, I hear you.
And at the diplomatic level as well. I
yeah.
think the idea here is we need to appeal to the broader spectrum of mm-hmm. folks in the world who are not extremists, who haven't been radicalized,
right.
and they can then feel more unified with those of us who, you know, are attempting to stem that kind of madness.
Yes.
And go out and provide similar kinds of support for people in their own cultures.
Right, right. And in your book, The Polarized Mind, you touch on, you know, how we can do that. And it all starts with us. It really does. But also starts
yeah.
with our orientation into life, our upbringing, and how we were valued and how we were respected and acknowledged.
Yes.
And seen as having an identity as just a human being, and that you're loved to be here. But again, so many of us don't have that background or the ability to do that because of our own difficulties and insecurities and upbringing. So,
right. And that's yeah. where intervention is so
yes,
vital.
It sure is.
Somebody who has the ability to connect
yes.
with the person who's victimized in a way that
right.
would help them begin to glimpse this larger picture that we're talking about.
Oh. Well, listen, Dr. Schneider, we're getting close to the end here, unfortunately. We have our
yeah.
CBS News coming up. But I wanted to ask you, what would be the best way for listeners to get a hold of your book? It's, again, Dr. Kirk Schneider, The Polarized Mind, Why It's Killing Us and What We Can Do About It.
Well, I think the best ways are through Amazon.com or Barnes mm-hmm. & Noble, and now it is now an e-book, I understand, so
yeah.
it's available in all e-book formats, or the major ones, mm-hmm. like Nook, and I think it's iBook, and Kindle, and so on.
Great.
So those are good ways.
Mm-hmm.
You could also go to University Professors Press. That's
mm-hmm.
That's the publisher.
Yep.
And we are actually launching together, which is a wonderful thing.
That's terrific. Good for you. That's terrific.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, listen, Dr. Schneider, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show today. Thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Michelle. I really enjoyed it.
Great.
I hope it's helpful. You know, for your listeners.
I know it will be. Gives folks things to think about and then possibly get more information about your humanistic psychology and sort of...
Yes, I'm sorry, if they want more information
sure.
about that, they can
yeah.
go to my website as well,
great.
Which is kirkjschneider.com.
Great, and I'll have that information up tomorrow so folks can do just that. Kirk, thanks again for being here. Such a pleasure.
Yeah, it's very mutual.
All right, take good care now.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
All right, folks, again, the show will be up and, of course, ready to download tomorrow if you'd like. That would be terrific. Of course, as always, you can email me if you have more questions or, you know, have feedback on the show today, docmichelle@aol.com. That's the way I roll. And I better roll out of here because we have CBS News coming up along with some other wonderful programs here on LA Talk Radio. Well, as I always say, do take care of yourself first, and then you'll be great for others. That's sort of basically what Dr. Schneider and I were talking about, too. All right, I'll be back next week. We're going to be talking about the cells in your body and our relationships and our minds and how they're all related. Thanks for listening. Have a beautiful weekend. This is Dr. Michelle. You can stay on the couch here on LA Talk Radio. Take care.
Flashing red.